Hey everyone, welcome to the 21st Century HR Podcast. This is going to be a special bonus episode recorded live on site at the Unleash Conference in Paris, France. I had a chance to sit down with the founder of Unleash, Mark Coleman, and we'll be back with that conversation after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the 21st Century HR Podcast. I am excited to actually be dropping the very first bonus podcast in the history of the show. I am live on site here in Paris, France with the founder of Unleash, Mark Coleman. And Mark and I are gonna go on a little bit of journey as to how his background and path led him to this very seat and this this event we're gonna be spending some time in the next couple of days. So. Mark, thanks for coming on. Why don't you, if you don't mind, just give listeners a brief intro and background on you.
Okay. Yes, I'm Mark Coleman. You could probably hear it off the voice. I'm Irish, based out of Budapest. I started in the HR tech field about 8 years ago, 9 years ago maybe at this point. Events are my passion. I've worked in events for 20 years. I've worked through sporting events like FIFA, Formula One. Fun, I would call more exciting events than the corporate world. and somehow I ended up in the world of HR. So go figure.
So if you kind of follow back to your education, would have not seen events to begin with. You studied microbiology.
I know.
back in the day. How did you find yourself from that background into the event space?
I've always had a bit of entrepreneur in me since I was a kid. There are stories there to tell from when I was a teenager. I was a big fan of science, always have been. So I did a degree and a master's in microbiology and biotech. And then, I don't know, anyone who's spent 5 years in university would probably understand how I felt about it. I felt like I started to sound academic. And for the village life at home where all my family are from, I guess I didn't sound like me anymore. The world of academia is very, very different, especially for science, because you're locked away in laboratories and experimentation and stuff like that. But I think that education gave me the foundations for what I do today, because it was all about quality control, doing experimentation, what kind of apparatus do you need, what are the processes involved, what are the procedures, what's the conclusion, and very much like what I do today, it's like trying to find the outliers. So why is there why is that dot there that should not be there? That means I'm going to be stuck in a lab till 12 o'clock tonight. So and I think that was the big conscious decision I had to make back then, which was, do I want to work for a GlaxoSmithKline? Maybe I shouldn't say that too loud because they're one of our customers. Do I want to be the slave to the big corporate and be focused on one area of science for an absolute lifetime? Or do what I had on the table at the time as a PhD in Cambridge, and that, again, felt like it's just going to be too academic. So I went traveling. I went backpacking. Something like you've done, I think. You've done plenty of that, right?
Yeah. Well, so I'm curious, like that kind of educational background and that kind of rigor in academia and scientific, how did that kind of carry over to your role as an entrepreneur? Like, are you looking at like market opportunities and solving things in a different way based, do you leverage that experience somehow when it comes to kind of problem solving and identifying opportunities?
Yeah, for sure. I think because we had this thing about holistic science. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to pull all of the thinking and decision science around all the science. So not just microbiology, but biology, marine biology, chemistry, genetics, everything across the board, and kind of pull all of that thinking together. And it was at the very, very beginning of that. And so it was the idea not to be disruptive, to be disruptive, but kind of not just be stuck with the same kind of thinking. And I think that's followed me through all the time. And I think you need that for the events business and as a whole. It's a very complex beast, especially what we do today. The number of tasks are now in the millions. we use, just like our, like all our customers here, that we use very sophisticated technology and tools and stuff like that to better enable us to do our jobs. But it's the planning and the thinking and the human resources around that's, yeah, for sure. I think it laid the foundations because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like doing a business degree. Because we recruit people from business schools, and I think they learn more from working with us for 3 months than they do coming out of school. Right. And I've been saying that for a few years now. So I think if you do an arts degree, it's great and everything else. But I think science is a little bit different. It's like becoming a doctor or a teacher. There's certain professions where you're prepared for the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think science, you know, it's got every element to it as well. There's teamwork. If something fucks up or blows up, you're going to have to do it all over again.
Right.
So there's an accountability. You can't blame people. You can't blame anyone else if your experiment blows up in your face. And so there's the pain of that.
Yeah.
And the diligence of that. So again, I think it was a good preparation, even though I didn't continue with that. Yeah. So.
And so how did you find yourself, you know, you've got a passion for events, you're working at events like FIFA and Formula One, which I would imagine for sports fan, that's kind of the pinnacle of those kind of events. How did you make that transition from that world to the HR world?
It was very simple, I think, you know, while I was in my early 20s, I'd kind of gone through, I didn't realize, so on all of this, I guess it's being Irish and having the gift of the gab, I'm well able to speak. So I didn't realize that, you know, selling, business development, marketing, they're kind of my superpowers in the corporate world. So, but I also found the sports world very shallow. You know, it's very boring after a while. It looks glamorous when you first get into it. I guess I found it was full of rich people or CEOs of big investment firms and stuff like that. And if the Dom Perignon wasn't good enough for them, and you know, it just, yeah, it was a very shallow world, and I wasn't learning anything from it as well. You're not developing, you're just making money.
Yeah,
that's probably it at its best. The fun part would be, yes, walking in on a semi-final and they've just scored a goal and the whole stadium's erupting and stuff like that. So the end product, but the end product almost like what we put into this product, it's over before you know it.
Right.
But especially with Formula One, like it's a few hours and zoom, it's a weekend, it's gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, what does that actually feel like when you, we've talked about this before, where there's so much that goes into putting on an event like Unleash, and, you know, months and hundreds to thousands of hours of efforts. And, you know, here we are on the eve of, you know, your flagship event that's going to be happening tomorrow and over the next 2 days, and then it's done. Like, what is that emotional process for you like when the show closes? I'm sure at the end of that day there's still kind of lingering stuff that you're coordinating, but the next day, you wake up the next day, like, where is your head?
Yeah, that's a good question. It depends. So for this trip, I'm staying here with my fiance for 2-3 days. So I think my head will be very, you know, it will be switched off. And you know, it's been a busy year. It's been a really intense year. So I'll enjoy Paris. But typically, I'm our biggest critic.
Yeah.
So I'll know at like 4 o'clock tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon, you know, where does this fit in the greater scheme of things and all the events we've done so far. And so my thinking is always for the next event. The best feeling I get off the shows, of course, is the customers.
Yeah.
So, we went from, I always remember, it's an easy story for me to tell, but in 2011, when we did the first conference, that was the biggest conference I did, just for 400 people. Everyone made a point of coming up to us afterwards and shaking our hands and saying, really well done. You know, this was the best HR event we've been to. And we kind of screwed up everything at that event. You know, Thomas Otter was the opening keynote. He had to scream to the back of the room for the slides to move, and the lanyards were all tangled up for a reception. We were up till 3 a.m. with Cornerstone putting you know, seat drops and stuff like this and packing bags. It was a tour de force in learning how to pull off an event. And then we learned how to do that for years, but I guess the experience for what we're trying to deliver is, you know, we want happy customers. Yeah. And so the following year, we got hugs. You know, Lisa Scales, for example, came running at us and, you know, big hug. And I go, you know, I was thinking to myself, this doesn't happen at other HR events.
Right.
And stuff. So, and I've been careful not to use the word HR community, because our editor in chief is like, we're not a HR community.
Right.
If we were, we'd meet up every day, all the time, and stuff like that. So it's, you know, we're an event. But when you see everyone get together like this, and I don't know what the percentage of, you know, there's been some people that have been to every event for 8 years. We've got Chris Long, who's been to all three shows this year.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good carbon footprint, but my God, like,
right.
You know, he's a hero for what we're doing, you know, and those are the stories. You know, for example, Jonathan got engaged here 2 years ago in Paris.
Okay.
Yeah, Jonathan Castlebaum.
Yeah, yeah.
And his baby is due today or tomorrow.
Oh, wow. That's a trip.
So there's the romance to it as well.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you're trying to send people away. You're looking at friendships, networking, learning, of course. But you want everyone going away armed to the teeth with, you know, how am I going to improve my life, my career, my team, my company, and stuff like
yeah.
that. So.
Well, I think, you know, this is probably my 8th or 9th event, I think,
hey.
over the years, and that's what struck me. And a lot of, you know, my friends that go to a lot of events, I mean, I think we all kind of share this view, especially the ones that come to Unleash quite a bit, is that from day one, from the moment you get here, it just has a different vibe. You can tell that it's not a traditional or typical HR conference.
Cool.
And I remember that was my first reaction, and I was like, this is cool and this is novel. Is this sustainable? Like, how are they going to make me feel this way? But you've managed to do it, you know. Somehow, I think it's I'm from your perspective. Like, what goes in? What's the thought process behind the programming and kind of the coordination of an event like this, where you just want this to be something that kind of sets outside of what most HR practitioners and leaders or people in the HR tech space are accustomed to?
Yeah, I think Steve Jobs. You know, said it before about, you know, the idea that the customer they didn't know they needed an iPhone kind of thing.
Yeah.
I found the HR space to be, it's quite easy for us to fall into it, to be quite honest. I think it was, one, it was very lethargic, and still is, to
yeah.
a point. We get compliments from the HR industry all the time. There's been lots of other events. Of course, back in our day when we were called HR Tech, they've been inspired all over the world, and it's kind of great to see that. I think we weren't trying to do things to just be different or be disruptive in any way. I think our goal was to really, and I think it started from day one, what's the customer looking for? What does the customer want?
Yeah.
And you've got to keep questioning that, and you've got to have a really good crew of people on with you. So the feeling that, you know, that's down to my team. They're just magic. They're brilliant at what they do. And also that's been a realization for us as well. We've had to change enormously as well. As we've kind of gotten into a bigger business, we need a lot of know-how that we're missing. So, you know, from that, telling that story of, you know, being 400 people in a room in 2011 and the growth we've had, arguably enjoyed, when we've kind of gone 6 or 7 years into that, maybe even more, I'm the CEO of the company, but I've never done anything this big before.
Yeah.
I have no know-how. I've had no time to think about that as well. And neither has anyone else. We've lived in Budapest. So we've changed our ways and our thinking, and we've had to go through massive reorganization as well. So, and still try and retain the elements of who we are.
Yeah.
But I think somehow with all that we've done, we lost that culture. It's gone. So we're actually in a place now where we have to create a new culture for ourselves. And hopefully we can take it up a gear, to be quite honest. I think we can. And maybe a couple of gears. So we've got a really good team in place now, and we've got like the customers in front of us are some of the most powerful organizations in the world. And I don't use that word lightly, you know, in terms of financials and all the rest.
Sure.
But, you know, we have, I think there's 78 now. I think it was 76 last week. We have 78 of the top 100 companies attending this.
Wow.
The European Commission are here every year.
Yeah.
And so can you see the kind of network that's in front of us, and what feeds into that. So we have our startups, we have our sponsors, big exhibitors, analysts, media. So everyone has their place.
Yeah. What, and so looking back over the years, I mean, you've had keynotes from Gary Vaynerchuk to Arianna Huffington,
yeah,
you know, Peter Hinson. What, I want to ask you who your favorite speaker was, because they're all your favorites, I'd imagine. But I will ask you, what was your, when you think back of all the talks that you've seen, what one kind of talk, you know, or even topic stands out to you the most? You know, what do you still think about? Like, what is something that you heard and it just resonated with you so much that to this day you carry it with you?
Saying one would be really hard. You know, you've got Vivek or Peter Hinson, these guys that kind of give you a picture of the future. And I think they've nailed it every time. Or you've got Daniel Thornhill, who's our economist, and he's gotten everything right about Brexit so far, except for the proroguing, where they kind of shut down Parliament. But he's been very good for our crowd. So I like the things that are practical. Or we were talking to Lexi there earlier. She's brought three big customers, Lego and Selligen, and she's talking about how they've saved, or at this event, they're going to be talking about how they've saved 10 million euros. So I go for a mix of commercial and inspirational and stuff like that. I guess if I was boiling it down to one just for me, maybe Mo Gadot, who we had before in Las Vegas 2 years ago, I think. I've been a big fan of his for years and a good friend. I think he's talk about his son passing away. I think the whole happiness conversation. I was suffering from chronic pain at the time. I just had surgery. I was taking all these pain pills and stuff like that. So I think that was one where I'd seen the audience kind of clap maybe 8 or 9 times. When you see that kind of audience reaction, I think Simon Sinek and a few other people over the years, and of course Branson, because he's Branson. People were angry though because he was 70 years old at the time. They were expecting a 40-year-old virgin CEO to run out on stage.
Surely he's developed a time machine.
They were like, "Yeah, he's gotten old." But I think Mo was the one I found the most endearing and a special time in my life when I needed to hear what he. And even for me, it's like I say, if you just get a golden nugget from the event, then it can be, you know, it can be the difference to your life when you go back to the office or go back home to your family and stuff like that. Yeah. So I think Mo would probably get my vote.
Great. Yeah. Well, I will, and I believe you have those talks on the website, right? If I was to...
Some of them we do.
Okay.
We're kind of building up, what would you call it? formidable force of online content, and soon to be launched, because I was actually into this during the week because we got Edward Snowden, and I'm like, where is that one? Who's hiding
that?
It? So we've got really like some amazing content that I think is timeless, but it's a lot of work to edit all this stuff,
as I do. Yeah, that's not a small undertaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Last question for you: What's next for Unleash? You kind of talked about, you know, this new direction that the organization is going and scaling. Like, when you think about your horizon a couple years out, what does that look like?
I'd like to think that Unleash is something very, very special, and I've been saying it for a while now. And I think the people that plug into it, every week and every event that we do, the amount of ideas being generated and support and everything else, there's a huge opportunity for us to do something special. I need, because we've just gone through a reorg, we just opened a new office in London as well in June. I have 9 people on the ground. We need to onboard them in the right way. Of course, when you're doing events, it's just pure chaos.
Yeah.
So it's kind of jump on board or you'll be left behind. So we've taken on some people that, you know, it's kind of in a period where you have to hire them, of course, but we have probably haven't given them the love that they need. And none of us had the real time. So I think, you know, the immediate things for us to do is to be able to work on what we have, because we're on the ground in the US now, in the UK, and of course, most of us are based out of Budapest in Hungary. We have opportunities coming at us from around the world. We're working on our 3 to 5 year strategy now, which is quite exciting. Because I'm not typically good at that kind of stuff. Well, it's been a massive, you know, we've kind of gone through this like phenomenal growth.
Yeah.
Even being on the ground in America, you know, it was kind of, we went to San Francisco to discover how expensive it is to put on a show.
Right.
Like, you know, we turned a whole pier.
Yeah.
We turned a whole pier. You know, John Summers was saying we got lucky with the weather and the blue skies and no fog, but we turned a kind of a shell of a building or buildings into a conference and expo, and it was awesome. But it was kind of, and then we figured out Vegas. So we've, you know, everything has been a learning curve, and hasn't given us the kind of the breeding to kind of look at our horizon and look at all those opportunities. So what I would say is I can't say it out too loud, but right now we've got some really cool opportunities on our table, and I think everyone around us are going to be excited about them. And you'll see evidence for that next year, especially with the kind of there's maybe 10 or 12 new people inside our business that give us a capability that we never had before. And of course, like everything else, they need to gel together.
Right.
Yeah, so we don't know if they like one another yet or not. So you bring in that many new people as well, it's never easy. So, like I said, it's culture. We almost have to, decide on, there's not this unleash culture.
Yeah.
There's probably, we all get on well together, but we're in the process of defining who we are and where we're going is probably the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. I know I'll be tracking it, and I know your schedule is madness today. So I appreciate you taking some time out to join me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.